At a time when investors are confronted with market volatility and a variety of challenges fueled by the uncertainty of inflation, unsettled geopolitical tensions, and economic pressures, Justin Klein and Luke Guerrero stand ready to take your finance and investment questions and share their unbiased answers. InvestTalk is made possible by KPP Financial, a registered investment advisor firm serving clients throughout the United States. The clarity for your path forward starts now. Here is KPP Financial Chief Executive Officer, Financial Advisor, Justin Klein.
Good afternoon, fellow investors, and welcome back to InvestTalk. This is our Wednesday, July 3rd, 2024 edition. The third quarter has arrived, and so has the July 4th weekend. Hope everybody has some fun plans for tomorrow to celebrate. And with me to celebrate is Luke Guerrero back with us. Thanks for being here, Luke.
Thanks for having me. Feeling very celebratory. You know, it's always interesting to me when the holiday happens in the middle of the week. It's kind of like a reset to the week. Some people hate it. I actually like it.
Well, next year we get it on Friday. So I think that'll be a big weekend for everybody. Today we had a shortened trading session in markets. And I believe Friday is a full day, correct?
Friday is a full day. That is correct.
Friday is a full day. So today was that holiday shortened day, and then tomorrow we have the markets closed. But despite the holiday coming up and everybody kind of ready for the weekend, shall we say, we're still here. We're still here to answer your finance and investment questions and give you our perspective, our unbiased perspective, so that you can understand the data that's coming through every single day. Understand it in context as best as, you know, us professionals can, right? We're not wrong, right? 100% of the time we can be wrong, but you know, we've been doing this a while, so we know how to unpack this data as effectively and efficiently as possible. And that's what we are here to do. So we're going to look at the market performance in a little bit, as well as run down some show topics. But as usual, we're going to hit our first caller question now.
Hi, this is Duncan from New York. Just calling for a quick analysis of stock ticker Perion, P-E-R-I. I got this as like kind of a wild card play in the growth section. I think they recently came out with news that they are no longer being paired up with Microsoft. That's why the stock went down. So I just wanted to see if I should take this as a loss, use the money for something else, or if this is like a sleeper or play in the growth side of the market. So looking forward to hearing from your thoughts and have a great day. Bye.
All right, looking at Perion Networks, small cap name, especially after being down 77% from its 52-week high. It's now down at $8.38. It hit a high of over $40 per share last year. So it's down big. And the reason is earnings have reversed or expected to reverse this year. They made $3.33 last year, expected to make only $1.22 this year and $1.13 next year. So, you know, where's... As I said, it was the famous commercial, where's the beef? Where's the growth? There's no growth anymore, right? So that's why this has fallen so dramatically. Its relative strength is two. Two. That means only 1% of the market has outperformed this. Only 1% of the market has performed worse than this name over the last year. No dividend here. It's entering microcap territory at $400 million. The technicals look terrible. Do you see anything to like here, Luke?
Well, yeah, I mean, I think you pointed out the initial reaction I had, which is this is not a growth play because there is no growth. Revenue has fallen off of a cliff. Their projected revenue is supposed to be 200 million, like 30% less than what they did last year. Profitability is falling. Cash flow is still steady, but it seems to me like the worst is yet to come. Overall, I mean, there's no debt, which is fine. But if you can't grow your business, it's not something you should allocate to. If you take a look at post earnings release, really every 3 months or so, you see an elevator downwards on high volume. So this is certainly not an indication for me that this is a buy. If you think it looks cheap now, it's probably going to be a lot cheaper.
Yeah, I remember. This is the perfect example of what we always say: is you have to invest through the windshield, not the rearview mirror. A lot of people, they use this data and it's data that is in the past. The market does not care about the past. The market cares about the future. What will earnings be going forward? That's why most of the time earnings are reacting based on the full year forward guidance of the company, not what happened the last quarter, because the past is the past. And it's about what are you going to do for me now? And this is a name where the prospects, as Luke said, are headed lower. Each of the next four quarters, earning revenue expectations are down 40% plus year over year. And next quarter, earnings are expected to be down 75% year over year. And that's why the stock is down roughly 75% over the past year. So I would definitely pass on this. Use it as a learning lesson. You could probably could have avoided it, especially in early February. This was consolidating very bearishly below all the major moving averages at $22. And that was a clear indication that you should be selling this name. And now it's down at $8. So focus a bit on the charts as well. Make sure to listen to those from time to time. And I would move on from Perry, P-E-R-I. Now, we have a lot of ground to cover over the next 45 minutes. And our main focus point is about mortgage payoff versus investing. This is a question that we get constantly. And there are pros and cons to everything. There's a gray area, and there is not one right answer for everybody. So we're going to look at the way to look at the pros and cons of each strategy. And guess what? It's not a black and white for everybody either. You could do a little bit of both. So we'll talk about that. And of course, we have other topics on the docket. One is in regards to a recent capital raise by a regional bank. We talked about regional banks and how they're struggling due to higher interest rates, costs on their deposits, as well as the assets that are tied to commercial real estate that many of them own that dominate their balance sheets. And this is an example of one that continues to struggle, and we're going to talk about why and how that could spread to the rest of the industry, especially those regional banks. Also, the clothes in your closet, they're worth a lot of money, potentially. And that business is booming. And so we're going to talk about that. And the big question is that also a place to invest as well? And I think there's a lot of lessons to be had there. And then lastly, we'll talk about, you know, how will equities fare going forward, especially in relation to inflation? And how does that relate to allocating capital in the economy? So we're going to look at that story if we have time. But mostly this is about you and your questions. Voice bank questions about CD rates, as well as questions submitted via the comment section over on our YouTube channel. And of course, your finance investment questions right now. So give us a call at 888-99-CHART. We're going to head to a short break, but on the other side, we'll talk about today's market activity. But please remember, you can call anytime, once again, and leave your question on the InvestTalk Voice Bank at 888-99-CHART.
On radio, on YouTube, streaming live on InvestTalk.com.
My question today is about HME Equipment Services, Inc.
And for our podcast subscribers,
if you're willing to take the risk,
InvestTalk.
If you're okay with that risk,
with host and financial advisor Justin Klein,
and that volatility, go for it.
And co-host and portfolio manager Luke Guerrero.
This company has fallen like a rock. It's down 52%.
Invest Talk.
Ticker symbol THT.
Everybody wants a secure financial future.
Richard, you have a question about TOL?
But getting there takes strategy, discipline, and the right information.
Wonder what you think of the price of it.
Go to Chris in Maine looking at IEX.
Hey, Justin. I own it. Just seeing what you thought of it.
InvestTalk is made better by listener contributions. So don't forget to call 888-99-CHART. It's official. We've now crossed over the 59 million download mark. InvestTalk. Call anytime. 888-99-CHART.
Now, Luke, let's take a look at the market today. It was a decidedly positive day overall for pretty much across the board. We had the main stories were, I believe it was the Fed minutes? Get the Fed minutes? Was
Fed that minutes yesterday? And payrolls, I would say. Yeah, that was today.
Yeah, payroll. And then we had the ISM number, the ISM services number, and that came in worse than expected as well. Prices paid did come down from 58.1 to 56.3, still growing, but at a slower pace. The broader services PMI number came in at 48.8. That's below the 50 mark. So overall, the services sector is shrinking. New orders also fell into negative territory at 47.3. And the employment index continued to stay in negative territory, going from 47.1 to 46.1. So I think that was a big factor because service economy is the majority of the domestic economy. And so how that trends will certainly have a large impact on the broad growth in the economy. And so I think that's why you saw the dollar down, you saw gold up, as well as that those Fed meeting minutes that I think were a bit more dovish than expected. Would you agree?
Yeah, I do agree with that. I mean, I don't really have much to add here. It's a fairly quiet day, as to be expected, heading into the holiday. It was a shortened day today, first of all. Then there's a holiday tomorrow. And then liquidity pretty much just dries up on Friday. That's what you should generally expect. But I think overall, I think jobs numbers, manufacturing data, although it missed in the direction that people expected it to miss, and it did miss just slightly. I think what we need to keep in mind heading into earnings season pretty soon here, right? It always seems like we're about to head into earnings season. There's some pretty strong growth projections. About 9% for the S&P 500 earnings growth is expected. So keep that in mind as you start to look at some names that you've had on your watch list. Do you think will actually meet some of those expectations that you have for the index broadly?
Yeah, I'll wait until Friday till we get a full day of trading to really see where the trends in markets, or at least equity markets, are. You definitely had a surge in the bond market with rates dropping on higher expectation of a Fed cut in September. Now, it's not a dramatic shift, but certainly noticeable from yesterday's expectations of September as well as December's Fed funds rate. And so I think that was interesting. The dollar was down. So we'll know a lot more, like you said, as we head into earnings season. And then it goes to how much of the big tech names are they impacted by a slowing economy, the Googles and Metas of the world, especially. And then NVIDIA, how much can the capital investment of large tech names be sustained? And we'll get a little more color there as well. So that was the market today as we head into the holiday tomorrow. Now, I hope you've been telling your friends that the Invest Talk audio podcast is also available in video form. You get to see Luke and I's wonderful face, as well as some data that we are looking at each day when we are fielding your calls. So a little more context and a lot more data, right? We can't list off all the data, but we tend to focus on the things that are most important to us. So I encourage you to head over to our YouTube channel, check those out, and subscribe. But we do get questions submitted via those videos. And Dominica's 69 says, "Hi, Justin and Luke. I'm looking at Molina Healthcare, ticker MOH. It looks to be a quality company at a fair price. Am I missing anything? Thanks." And, this is a name that is also down dramatically from its 52-week high. It peaked out over $420 per share. Now we're below $300. That was just in March. So big reversal here. What do you think was the catalyst?
Yeah, well, generally, I think it's being dragged down with a lot of healthcare names. You see CVS was dragged down because of unexpected usage. And if you look at the business segments for Molina Healthcare, about 81% of its revenue comes from Medicaid, 12% comes from Medicare. So this company seems like it's probably particularly susceptible to some of the trends that drag down the healthcare industry more broadly. That's probably one of the reasons why it's dropped off so precipitously since about the end of March.
Yeah. Now I remember there was some news in March around the Medicare payouts, and it was lower than expected.
Yep.
From the government. And so that certainly impacts, the cash flows going forward of Molina and related companies. And so I think that's one issue. Now, revenue or earnings did finally shrink last quarter, down 1% year over year. And that hasn't happened for pretty much since the pandemic. And so, has the pandemic boost helped them? And is that wearing off right now? And I think the market is signaling it is. So this is a TBD, something to keep on your watch list, because certainly a quality business, good profitability, balance sheet is perfectly fine. But I wouldn't be jumping into it yet until you get some strength in the charts. And right now it looks very, very weak. So keep on the sidelines for now on Molina Health. Now we're moving into a break still to come in this podcast. We'll tackle your voice bank calls and get into the main focus point. So stay with us and give us a call at 888-99-CHART.
Got a question for Justin or Luke? You're the best person to ask it.
Is it a good idea to sell your losses in a Roth IRA and just use whatever you have left to reinvest into better stocks?
InvestTalk is ready 24/7.
I would really appreciate if you could give me an entry point for a company called Medtronic, MDT.
Call InvestTalk, 888-99-CHART, or post your questions on the InvestTalk YouTube channel.
Got two for the price of one. Justin Klein and Luke Guerrero are here, and they're taking your finance and investment questions now. 888-99-CHART.
Now, today's focus point concerns this story. Mortgage payoff versus investing, a question as old as time. Which one builds wealth faster? And you know, this is something we get very regularly on Invest Talk throughout the years. And the answer usually is generally the same. And it really is, it depends. Okay. And, you know, being debt free is a great goal, but is it the most financially sensible goal? And, you know, when you look at just the raw numbers of what typically somebody is paying on a mortgage, right now, most people are paying 3-4%, maybe 5%. And what you get in equities, 10-ish percent, conservatively 8% over the long term, the numbers are clear, right? You're going to earn more from investing. But as we always say, it's not apples to apples because you're looking at different levels of risk, different levels of volatility. And if everything goes right, yeah, investing makes more sense. So what I'll do is I'll go over the pros of paying off your mortgage early. And Luke, you can go over the cons. That work?
Sure. All right. Let's do it.
So the pros are obviously when you pay off your mortgage early, you are guaranteeing the return on your investment because you're no longer paying the interest on that amount on your mortgage. So whatever your mortgage rate is, guaranteed return there. Okay, so that's number one. Number two, peace of mind. If you don't like the idea of having to pay a mortgage all the time and having that burden over your head, you know, paying that down and getting that off of your plate sooner rather than later can be freeing emotionally. And I think that's underappreciated. And the last one is when you build equity in your home, you can do things like refinance. You can take advantage of rates going down, for example, and refinance into lower rates when maybe, you know, if you don't have much equity, it may be more difficult depending on your broader financial situation. So those are the pros of paying down that mortgage. Luke, what would you say the cons are?
No, I think the first is the opportunity cost. I think that's the most obvious one, right? So any money that you're spending to pay down that mortgage, you mentioned most people are probably paying mortgages between 3-4.5%, is money that isn't being invested and can't be growing. Maybe you're taking that money from your 401k. You're not maximizing that, not getting your employer contribution there. You're walking away from some cash. So that opportunity cost is probably the biggest and the most obvious one. Secondly, your wealth is really tied up in something that is far less liquid than if you were to invest it. It's very easy to go into your, you know, brokerage account and sell out of your stocks, sell out of your bonds. It takes a lot more to sell out of your house. Housing is an illiquid investment. Real estate is a less liquid investment than traditional equity bond asset class, right? And lastly, I think one that most people don't think about is that mortgage interest is tax deductible. So you're walking away from some of those tax deductions that you could have should you pay off your mortgage over a longer period of time.
Yeah. And, you know, the illiquid aspect of real estate, I think, is underappreciated. Yeah. Now, you could get a HELOC and gain access that way to that equity. But once again, that can be costly. So, you know, what are the pros and cons of taking that money and investing? Well, it's kind of the corollary to all that, right?
Yeah.
I think the number one way to think about this, though, is order of operation, right? Where should you allocate your capital? Now, the first one is always employer match, because while you guarantee yourself the return on your investment, or your return on investment with paying down your mortgage, you also guarantee yourself a return on investment by getting that full employer match. There's typically either 50 cents or 100 cents on the dollar, way higher than the guaranteed return you're going to get from your paying down your mortgage. Okay. So that's number one. Then it's, okay, what's your tax bracket? Do you want to get tax deductions by putting money into your 401k, IRA, Roth IRA, et cetera? And then once you kind of max out that those tax deferred accounts, then maybe you go to pay down your mortgage. And obviously, investing it, there's higher risk. It's a lot more volatile. And that's why it's comparing apples to oranges. It's not just about the total return. It's also the risk adjusted return that you're getting. Okay. And so for a lot of people, it's a little bit of both. There's nothing wrong with throwing a little extra towards a mortgage each month if you've kind of taken those other priorities into account first. Okay. Anything to add, Luke?
Yeah, I would say it also depends on what phase of life you're in. Mm-hmm. When you're closer to retirement, if you can pay a little bit extra to pay off your house, right, that reduces your expenses in a time where maybe you aren't going to be working. So, you know, it depends based on your current financial situation. It depends on your phase in life. As you said at the beginning, it depends.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that's a great point. As you get closer to retirement, you have less time to ride out the ups and downs of equities. And you probably want to, it makes the retirement planning easier when you don't have a mortgage hanging over your head. And so the closer you are to retirement, you know, paying down that mortgage probably makes more sense. And it's a more conservative thing to do. And as you get closer to retirement, you generally want to put your financial situation in a bit more conservative place, as opposed to when you're younger, maybe in your 20s, 30s, maybe early 40s, you have plenty of time to let the equity volatility even out over time. And you're not so concerned about getting that mortgage down to zero in the near term. Well, I think that covers it. Tomorrow is the 4th of July. It's a market holiday. So we put together a fresh compilation show for you. We call it the Best of Caller Questions podcast. So look for that to be posted on the Invest Talk, on investtalk.com and other podcast platforms. And remember, the Invest Talk downloads are free, so you can find them anytime at iTunes, Spotify, or Google Play. And the phone lines are open right now for you at 888-99-CHART.
Whether you're starting or scaling your company's security program, demonstrating top-notch security practices and establishing trust is more important than ever. Vanta automates compliance for SOC 2, ISO 27001, and more, saving you time and money while helping you build customer trust. Plus, you can streamline security reviews by automating questionnaires and demonstrating your security posture with a customer-facing trust center, all powered by Vanta AI. Over 7,000 global companies like Atlassian, Flow Health, and Quora use Vanta to manage risk and prove security in real time. Get $1,000 off Vanta when you go to vanta.com/go. That's vanta.com/go for $1,000 off.
InvestTalk. Tell your friends they can listen live, download the free podcast, or watch InvestTalk on our YouTube channel. And they can leave their finance and investment questions anytime on 888-99-CHART.
Good afternoon. I'm an InvestTalk client for over the last 4 years that was initiated by a 30-minute phone call with Steve Peasley in 2019. Thank you for your wonderful tribute and providing the Salute to Steve Peasley edition. Steve used to say on air, "We will answer any question so long as it is financial." I hope this is still your motto. Justin and Luke, my question is regarding retail CD rates. Currently across the U.S., between 3 months and 5 years, the 9-month duration appears to be the best rate. What information are these banks researching that has resulted in the 9-month duration as the best rate? if the 9-month rate was around 5%, give or take a couple basis points, what percentage of the 5% profit is the bank making? What 9-month investment is the retail bank investing in, or how are they making money from the short duration of only 9 months? Thank you very much. Bye-bye.
Well, thank you for those kind words about Stephen. Yes, that is still our motto here. We will answer any question as long as it is financial. And this is one of them, CD rates. Where are they getting that 9 months? Well, it's just the shape of the yield curve. And the expectations for the market is for rates to stay relatively high over the near term. And so that's why you're, and then, within 9 months, roughly, rates starting going down. So it's just simply the shape of the yield curve. And the banks don't make a percentage of what they're paying you. They make a percentage of what they're getting paid in the assets that they own. And so they borrow short and lend long. That's the typical standard straightforward banking model. Now, it's a bit more complex today than it was 50 years ago, but still that's generally their business model. So if they're paying you 5%, then their goal is to earn more than 5% on their assets, and they earn what's called the net interest margin, the difference between those two. Anything to add, Luke?
Not really. Just to specify, I mean, the types of things that banks do with it, right? They have capital requirements. So they have to have some amount of their cash on hand in some sort of safe investment in case they're redemptions, whatever. You know, they do individual loans. They do interbank lending. There are all sorts of avenues over which banks are trying to make money off of the money that you have given them. But generally speaking, yes, they make the difference between whatever they can get for all those different opportunities and what they're paying you out over, in this case, 9 months.
Yeah, they have a cost of deposits. And that is a great segue into our next focus point, and that is a Texas-based regional bank. We've talked about this over the past really year plus since the Silicon Valley Bank crisis last spring. And it was about, hey, regional banks are likely to suffer for a few reasons. And this is the first decent-sized bank that is starting to raise capital to deal with the challenges they are facing. This is First Foundation, FFWM is the symbol, and they're selling 49%. Sorry, or is it 49 or 51?
51, I believe.
51, yeah. 51% of ownership to a group of investors, including Fortress Investment Group, and they're selling it for well below market close yesterday. At $4.10 per share, it's still trading at $5 today. So didn't even go all the way down there. But it's really about their commercial real estate exposure. 72% of total loans in the first quarter were real estate related loans here. So that's one big issue. But Luke, why don't you unpack what the other issue is with the bank?
Well, I mean, generally speaking, I think the big issue with this bank and with a lot of banks is primarily that concentration piece of loans within that sector. So especially with some of these smaller institutions, they hold far higher concentrations within that sector. And so, you know, within understanding how these businesses are trying to capitalize, right, you essentially have property that is not worth as much as a lot of people purchase it for. And some of these loans are so underwater that they have to raise capital as sort of like a bridge loan kind of way. And some of that has dried up within the space. And so offering a piece of the business essentially is some of the ways that these guys are trying to fill the gaps.
Yeah, trying to plug that hole. But it's also about the cost of the deposit. So we just had that caller ask about CDs and those certain banks paying 5%. Well, First Foundation's average rate paid on interest-bearing deposits, which CDs are one of them, including checking account deposits, savings account deposits, et cetera, that's around 4% in the first quarter. That's up from around a quarter percentage point, so 0.25% 2 years ago. So from 0.25 all the way to 4%. So that shrinks that net interest margin. So not only are the values of those loans or the underlying property of those that underpins those loans going down, but also the amount of cash flow, their net interest margin is shrinking as well. So they can't plug that equity hole from inside, right? Because their profits are shrinking. And so that's why they're looking elsewhere. And so First Foundation's net income fell 91% in the first quarter year over year. And this is a microcosm. And this is why, you know, a lot of people are looking at some of these smaller regional banks and they look cheap. But a lot of them are value traps. The devil's in the details. And you really have to dig into those details. And obviously, First Foundation is one of those where if you dug in, you'd realize, hey, it looks cheap, but the reality is far, far different. Now, here's another question that came in via our YouTube channel. Jim Gustafson says, I read yesterday that Glencore will acquire majority of the coal business of Teck Resources in Q2 this year. I own both of these companies, about 1.6 of my portfolio, percent of my portfolio in Glencore and 0.8 in Teck Resources. I'm thinking about maybe selling Teck and taking the money and buying Glencore shares. I have a little bit too many stocks right now anyway, so I'll trim down one position and kind of combine them. Do you think it's worth a good idea, or is Teck still worth owning after the deal? I like the fact that you're thinking about combining them, but I would go the other way. We own Teck for clients, so I rather sell Glencore and own Teck, because Teck has copper assets that Glencore doesn't. And so, and Teck's been outperforming Glencore. So I would go with a stronger name. Wouldn't you, Luke?
Yeah, I would as well. I think you also have to think about somebody spinning off and selling part of their business is going to have a lot more cash on hand from the selling of that business. And so if they can use that cash to deal with what they've already perceived to be their best business units and then streamline it there, that's a lot of opportunity for that business as well. Glencore is going to have to deal with combining an external entity within their operation, which can be incredibly complex and can take time. So overall, I think if even, you know, this specific scenario, we own Teck for clients, like you mentioned. So certainly we are more in favor of you tilting towards Teck. I think generally speaking, it's difficult to understand how mergers, especially of just singular business entities, are going to fit in afterwards, just as a general case. So I would stress away from kind of buying the entity that is purchasing the external business unit generally. And in this case, it just makes sense because we like Teck.
And more often than, and when he says Teck, doesn't mean Teck sector.
Correct.
Teck Resources
T-E-C-K.
Is the company. Yeah, there
yes.
You go. T-E-C-K is the company. And typically when a company is buying another company's assets and the company that's selling the asset isn't in financial peril, right? They don't need to sell the asset. The acquirer is probably, more often than not, they're overpaying because they need to overpay in order to pry that asset away from a company that's doing just fine and Teck is doing just fine. So, you know, this, and that may not be the case here, but it's a general rule. So, yeah, I would be consolidating more into Teck as opposed to Glencore. Thanks for the call. Now, 2024 is moving fast and the proof is here. We've started the third quarter, and for the 4th of July is tomorrow. And that means you need to be prepared for financial freedom, right? We're talking about tomorrow is about freedom. Well, you know, this is a reminder that your financial freedom is, I wouldn't say number one, but it's probably number two, right? To just general freedom. And so if you need help understanding whether your portfolio is aligned so that you are on track to achieve your own version of financial freedom, I encourage you to reach out to our company, KPP Financial, where we practice parallel investing, which means we invest right alongside our clients. And we provide unbiased guidance, both on and off air. So I encourage you to take advantage of our free portfolio review assessment via telephone or Zoom. Yeah, we moved over to Zoom. We were on GoTo. We moved over to Zoom. So yeah, send us a message through investtalk.com. Now, you may have heard InvestTalk has achieved more than 59 million downloads, and our work continues after this 30-second break. So hang on.
Every investor is working to build a secure financial future.
Would this be an opportune time to get into annuities?
Everyone's situation is different.
Get your thoughts on CRM, Salesforce.
And so are their questions.
And I was just calling for your assessment of Blackstone Incorporated.
24/7, rain or shine, InvestTalk is made better by the power of you. 888-99-CHART.
Calling about a Encore Wire Corporation, WIRE, and wondering what you guys think about the company. maybe a good entry point on the stock. It's, I'd like to see it come in some, but I'm kind of wondering where to pull the trigger on it if it proves to be a good company to invest in. All right, thanks. And I will listen on the podcast.
Encore Wire. Well, it was purchased, so you can't buy it anymore. That's simple. There we go. All right, let's move on to our next focus point, and that is in regards to your old clothes. Everyone has them. I know I'm always saying I need to clean out my closet. Even after I clean out my closet, I'm like, I still have too much clothes. And I'm not a big, I don't buy clothes that often. But, you know, most people have closets full of unworn clothes ready for that purging. And on average, Americans throw away 70 pounds of clothes every single year. Every single year. And, you know, the secondhand apparel market is worth now $43 billion. Last year, $43 billion. So, you know, the big question, Luke, is this a space that is worth investing in, considering it's estimated the market will grow about 11% on average each year through 2028? And there's some public companies that are taking advantage of this trend.
Well, I mean, it's certainly an interesting question, right? This is indicative of sometimes what sounds like a good business idea doesn't actually make a good business.
Yeah.
Right. Something else that comes to mind is people need to rent office space short term. Well, WeWork was a terrible business. It was a terribly run business. And so you have a lot of companies that maybe through no fault of their own, ThredUp, RealReal, some others, I'm blanking on the names of some others, but they essentially came in with these high expectations. Why is that? Because there's a lot of sales volume on eBay. There's a lot of sales volume on secondhand goods on Craigslist. There's a lot of sales volume in other places. But maybe because the expectation was so high, some of these names have been suffering in terms of their stock price. And so, yes, it's a good idea. I don't know if anybody's been able to implement it the correct way.
Yeah, I think that's a couple of important points there is that just because there's more demand for something doesn't mean that that is a viable, sustainable business model. And then secondarily, even if it is a sustainable, viable business model, it has to be executed well on top of that. So WeWork is, I think, a good example where I do think there is a market for, that type of model, because other companies have done it successfully. But WeWork, I think, just did it more. They expanded too fast and you know, they just had these grandiose ideas of what it would be. In reality, they should have grown a lot smaller and focused more on operations and profits as opposed to just top line. Now, that's kind of indicative of that whole era where money was cheap and capital was thrown around freely. But, you know, when you look at the names that are in the space now, you have RealReal, you have ThredUp, and these are names that, once again, growing the top line dramatically, but neither of them had been able to turn that demand into consistent profitability. In fact, them along with, what's the other one, Savers, Village Value, these are all names that recently IPO'd and are down significantly from their high. So, you know, it's an interesting idea, but good ideas that are implemented aren't always good businesses. And it's important, it's extremely important for especially newer investors to internalize that and focus on the quality of the businesses we talked about in our webinar last month, Luke. Was that last month or was that 2 months ago now?
I think it was last month. I think it was June 11th, I want to say. That sounds like a date that makes sense to me. June 11th.
Yeah, exactly. So much like the shirts in your closet, secondhand apparel sellers have a lot of promise, but you know how much value really is there, right, Luke?
Yeah, and how can you extract it?
Yeah. And it,
it's another difficult question.
It's a very difficult question. Now, let's tackle another InvestTalk voice bank question now at 888-99-CHART.
Hi, I wanted to know if using such apps as the Cash App for investments is a legit way to get into the game of investing. Thanks.
What do you think of these apps, Luke, like the Cash App and other of these? apps that help people save money and kind of gamify the whole process?
Honestly, I don't know enough about how the Cash App works to give my honest opinion on it. I think if you're trying to find high yield savings accounts, I would probably lean towards more traditional bank sponsored ones. If you're trying to invest in the market, I think a traditional brokerage is probably the best way to go. They tend to throw things at you, right? They try to throw incentives at you. But generally speaking, you should probably look past that and be more concerned with longevity of the business that you're investing with, I would say.
Yeah. Try to overlook gimmicks and just ease of use. And focus more on the quality of the outcomes that these apps create. Now, this is Invest Talk. I'm Justin Klein with Luke Guerrero, and we have one goal here each and every weekday, and that's to help you achieve your own version of financial freedom. And our work continues after this final break, so get your questions in now at 888-99-CHART.
Every investor is working to build a secure financial future. How they get there and when they get there, that depends on many factors. The more you learn about how the market works, the better your chances for success. So don't forget to call InvestTalk, 888-99-CHART.
I got a question about this stock, ticker symbol FIVN. And this is a company which I have this thing called Tip Ranks on my phone. Gives me notifications and got a recommendation to buy this stock. And I wanted to know what you thought about it. We appreciate you, all your advice. We love the show. Thanks.
All right, looking at 5.9. This is a name that peaked out during the 2021 software craze, right? Extrapolating the adoption of software during COVID. And saying that growth was going to last forever, and it didn't. And it's peaked out at $202 per share. Now it's at $42 per share, so down 80%. Earnings, they're pretty solid, right? Profitable. Luke, what are you seeing on the earnings trends?
Well, actually, I'm seeing that their net margin has been negative. Maybe your data source is making adjustments for some extraordinary items that makes it look positive. But yeah, you know, on an actual bottom line basis, it has been negative. It's supposed to be positive this upcoming year. But if you take a look at February, there's a pretty steep drop off. Why? Well, forward-looking guidance was pretty no bueno, I would say. It was pretty bad. It disappointed Wall Street. And so there's been a precipitous decline in the stock price ever since. It's a clear downtrend, even going back beyond that, going out a year back to July. And that's because, like you said, a lot of these names were peaking at a time when they thought there was going to be widespread adoption of some of these software names. Everybody's moving home. People didn't realize that the world next year doesn't exactly look like the world is going to look today. And so with the lack of bottom-line profits, it still has not much debt, about $794 million of debt on a $3 billion company, but they have issued some shares over the past 5 years. It's a consistent issuer of shares. Someone called in the other day talking about or asking about what we mean when we say share issuances. And I stress that it's okay for a company to issue shares. That's how companies capitalize themselves, with equity and with debt. But what you don't want to see is a company that's consistently year over year over year diluting its shareholders. And this seems to be a company that it's doing that. So for me, coupling the lack of profitability with the dilution of shareholders, there's a lot of short interest out there. There's no relative strength at all whatsoever. And it's in a clear downtrend. I would say that I would not take the recommendation of whatever that service was that the caller was using, and I would not buy into this name.
Yeah, and free cash flow has started to roll over. Return equity is negative. Return invested capital is negative. So, I would stay away from this. And relative strength is very poor. Eight.
It's not two.
Not two, but, you know,
but it's not good.
It's not much better than that. That's for sure. All right. Well, let's touch a bit, Luke, on what's. I think the biggest question in markets right now has to do with misallocation of capital. And are investors allocating their capital correctly? Typically, when you have the credit spreads tighten, meaning that cost to borrow for corporations is very low compared to the yields on treasuries, you typically have small caps outperforming. But right now, you don't. Right? You've had, especially recently, you've had a surge in, you know, the Mag 7 stocks that historically don't benefit from a very comfortable broader financial system. Okay. So The big question is, what is driving this speculative fervor? Do you think, Luke, it's still just too many novice investors chasing after the sexy names? Or is this a market structure issue where money just flowing into the indexes and then more and more money chasing these big names?
I mean, it doesn't have to be any single issue. I think it's a little bit of a lot of things. I think, yes, money flowing into passive indices is flowing into these names and accentuating some of these issues, some of these price differences. I would contend that maybe there's a slight overreaction in terms of overvaluation of the index broadly in some of these names. Certainly there are pockets where they seem to be overvalued. People like to point to the strength of the U.S. equity market relative to international and emerging markets over the past, 3 years and say, well, this is certainly a bubble. I would contend that, well, U.S. growth has been exceptionally high. So I don't think there's really alarm bells to be raised. I think there are pockets where some things are overvalued, but the market as a whole, I don't really think is that overvalued.
Yeah, and I think that's the message here, is that underneath the surface, there are a lot of names that have great valuations because the earnings are going up at a nice clip overall, even outside the Mag 7. That brings a lot of value to ultimately the shareholders that are owning those smaller names. And so we could be entering that period where those small cap names start to catch up with those large cap names. Now, that about does it. I'm Justin Klein here with Luke Guerrero, and it completes another Invest Talk program. We thank you for listening. We encourage you to tell your friends and family about our free podcast downloads, which you can find anytime at iTunes, Spotify, or Google Play. And be sure to rate and review on iTunes as well. And head over to Invest Talk, or head over to YouTube, excuse me, and check out the Invest Talk YouTube channel. Independent thinking, shared success. This is Invest Talk. Enjoy your July 4th holiday.
InvestTalk is a trademark of KPP Financial. Because of the nature of the interactive dialogue inherent in the format of this program, it's important for the listener to understand that not all comments made will apply to them. Specifically, nothing said shall be taken to be investment advice, or shall statements on this program be considered an offer to buy or sell security. Because such advice is rendered solely on an individual basis and at times will require that the investor review a prospectus before investing. InvestTalk is a copyrighted program of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial, a registered investment advisor firm, which retains all rights. For more information regarding KPP's investment advisors, call 1-800-557-5461. Thank you for listening, and your comments and questions are welcome on our 24-hour listener line at 888-99-CHART.